so begin.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-holy?
I see a great hand reaching out of the stars.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
Weapons,
that's why people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who wants to Zahadu who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city of flames.
Giants in the playground.
Get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Hello and welcome to Chats and Television Podcast, Season 6, Chatsalon 5. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by the mayor of the smoldering crater that is the San Diego Wastelands. Hello, Magellan.
Hey, we're really trying to change our image here. We're rebranding from San Diego Wastelands to New San Diego.
Neo SD.
Yeah. You know.
How's that going so far?
Well, it's pretty much just me and the smoldering ruins, so I would say we've got 100% of people on board.
Every time they talk about the San Diego Wastelands, I like get a couple years added onto my life. It's really nice.
That's the Babylon 5 drinking game, except whenever they mention the San Diego Wastelands, you like have a gallon of beer.
You have to drink a lot of beer. Yeah. It's the Clock Stoppers game.
So you die like three times.
John, you know what country I'm curious about hearing from in Babylon 5?
What country is that?
China.
Okay.
I got the soundboard, everyone. Magellan said, don't bring it to the podcast. Don't bring it. And I was like, I promise I won't bring it. And then I was like, Magellan, what's your favorite board game? And he was like,
Boggle.
And I was like, that's...
The problem with our soundboard is that it's references to things that we like reference to each other.
Sure, it's for us. Ultimately, isn't this podcast for us, Magellan?
I guess so. Yeah, you're right.
It fills me with energy like a big old cup of
coffee.
You know?
Jesus.
Honestly, points to anyone who can identify any of those voice clips. You're a mega nerd if you can recognize
what's my favorite clip? I feel like I had a favorite clip in there.
Boggle. Boggle.
No,
Boggle.
It's not Boggle.
You sure it's not?
Boggle.
Okay. I have so many. I can only put three into my soundboard at once because it's like you got to pay money for it, but I can also change my voice. I won't do that on the podcast because it makes editing hard.
Yeah, it destroyed our call.
And it also like nuked the Skype call earlier. Yes, that's correct. But for now, I'm going to close my button and hopefully not accidentally hit like,
China.
You know, by accident, just, you know, hitting buttons.
Yeah. I can see the numbers that you have to hit to make the sounds go out because you're typing them
boggle,
into our
boggle,
document.
Boggle, boggle,
three. Oh, God. This train wreck is theoretically a Babylon 5 podcast where Magellan and I watch two episodes of Babylon 5 every week. And we are nearing the end of Babylon 5, folks. This week, we watched Season 5, Episode 17. Movements of Fire and Shadow. We also watched Season 5, Episode 18, The Fall of Centauri Prime. First, we're going to discuss Movements of Fire and Shadow, which was written by J. Michael Straczynski. It was directed by John C. Flynn III. It aired June 17th, 1998, and it takes place from August 9th to August 14th of 2262. Magellan, what happened in Movements of Fire and Shadow?
As the war between the Alliance and the Centauri grows more intense, Sheridan must contend with rogue Narn and Drazi generals who want to take drastic action. Mm-hmm. Lita and Franklin uncover a startling truth behind the Centauri campaign. Alan, what do you think of Movements of Fire and Shadow?
So the thing with Season 5 now is like we're getting a lot of basically two-parters, like ostensibly two-parters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this one felt like part one of a two-parter, and I actually ended up watching it twice because we'll talk about this in part two, but we watched the two of these episodes together recently this week, and you know, that's a lot of fun, and it's always a nice watching experience. But the way I take notes on Babylon 5 is I like pause a lot, I take down quotes, I you know, do a lot of shit, and that's harder when you're just watching live and like reacting live.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different vibe. So I ended up rewatching Movements of Fire and Shadow looking for like little interesting moments and like lines. So There is stuff to appreciate in this episode, but I don't think it's like the meatiest part one that we've had.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's really hard for me to separate exactly what happened in this one from what happened in The Fall of Centauri Prime, also because like the most interesting stuff happens in The Fall of Centauri Prime.
Yeah.
I would say the bulk of this episode's got like Sheridan dealing with, okay, why are you guys being buttheads with all the Alliance aliens? And then we've got Lita and Franklin finding the eggs and stuff. And then like a little bit of Londo things going on. But then the real kind of like electric Londo stuff happens in the second episode.
Right. Going back to this first one, I was like, ooh, a lot of the best parts of these two are teed up in this one and then knocked over in the second one. I think the Lita and Franklin stuff is better than I expected, especially like looking at it again in the context of like where this is going, because The Fall of Centauri Prime feels a little bit self-contained and it's kind of like definitive ending a storyline. Mm-hmm. But Moments of Fire and Shadow is like, no, we still have a couple episodes to really play with some of these ideas and to set up more tension.
Yeah.
Some of that tension is knocked over, is taken care of in the second episode, then some of it is not yet. So we get another audio log to open the episode. We have Lockley talking about how shit's effed as usual, and how Sheridan has authorized the White Stars to fire on the Centauri. Yeah. He says, like, the no more neutrality for Babylon 5. That went up in smoke. It's like, I feel like Sheridan...
He's so cranky.
Yes. He's extremely, like, grumpy throughout these episodes, and I get it. I mean, he's going into war, but it's like, he's so mad. He's just angry. And he has a lot of these, like, yelly moments. I think he had a funny yelly moment in this episode later. If that's true, Michael, I'll skin him alive! And it's like, Sheridan. You silly man. He meets up with Delenn, and this is the setup for what ends up happening in the second one, where they want to set up a meeting with President Luchenko back on Earth about some prototype technology that they want to be able to use in this conflict. And he's like, Delenn, I need to tell you something. She's like, yeah, Sheridan, I didn't think that outfit was that good, honestly, either. That's what I wanted to tell you. And we just move right on from that. And I'm like, I guess Sheridan's the type of guy to be like, hey, Delenn, I got like this like really fun negligee that I want you to wear in bed with me. And then we're going to wake up at 4 a.m. and at least we can like kiss and like get handsy at 4 a.m. instead of just being sad like we have been the last couple of months. But it's a throwaway joke because Babylon 5 doesn't do much with its like sexy stuff.
Right. Yeah. It almost, you like completely forget that it happened.
Exactly.
It wasn't even clear to me that they were talking about lingerie, because almost immediately he was like, oh no, that was like a silly thing.
Really, I need you to risk your life for me.
Yeah, could you just do that? And then we actually for once have like a real moment of intimacy between them, which, okay, I think I'm being a little too harsh on the Sheridan Delenn relationship.
Yeah,
but they actually shared like a tender kiss and she left and looked back and it was like, yeah, oh, this is nice.
It's all of that. And he's like, if you're going to risk your life, at least like do it. And I'll know where you are this time, that kind of thing. Like, let's work together in you risking your life.
The thing that kind of undercuts it is like, it doesn't really make total sense why she's risking her life. Or like the reason for it is that the Earth president is being stubborn.
Well, it's the Earth president being stubborn and it's like secret tech. And he's like, if you don't do it in person, then we could be hacked or something. But that's a really flimsy... Like, get encrypted encrypted phone calls. You guys can do that.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes that plot kind of like, but
you're just setting up for her to be in danger.
They shared a nice moment, at least.
For sure. Another nice moment, calm before the storm moment. We have Veer.
Did we talk about how Sheridan, like, entered Lockley's quarters or whatever? Where he was like, was this this episode? Where he was like almost entirely bent in half, leaning on the side of the door.
Oh, yeah. I forget that is
funny. I don't remember why that scene just popped into my head.
Yeah. But speaking of quarters, Veer invites Lita and Franklin into his newly appointed personal private quarters where he can play Super Nintendo and...
Yeah, it's like a storage room. It's
pretty
like
much.
So drab.
It's very sad, and he's very sad. Veer is enlisting Lita and Franklin. He's asking them if he can find out what's going on with the Drazi, because there's a lot of unaccounted for Centauri bodies in the conflict. Mm-hmm. And he says, Franklin, you have the medical knowledge to speak with them and ask them politely. And Lita, when that doesn't work, you can also do telepath shit on them, and then they'll just tell us. Franklin is like, I don't see why not. I'll hide out. We already know that Franklin is going to help. He doesn't care about sides. He'll help whoever needs help. But Lita has an agenda now, which is, it seems different for her, but she's drawing a line and saying 500,000 credits. I don't do stuff like this for free. It's not that I won't do it. It's sort of like the Jakar telepath thing from last week, where it's like, morally, I might have not done this in the past, but now my higher goals are fine with this, and I'm able to square stuff like this now. So 500,000 credits donated directly to young telepaths in need.
I loved that moment when she demanded payment, and Franklin's like, whoa, okay, that's a lot of money.
She says, consider this a charitable donation. Hell, it might even be deductible.
Yeah. And then she says something about, you could consider that, a dollar per body or something.
It's like, yeah, whoa. She's like, it adds up. It's like a dollar per body. A dollar per body.
Gosh.
Yikes.
Lita's just... She's really kind of scary in this episode.
Extremely. I mean, she does kill someone. She does a kill in this episode.
She does force them to kill themselves. It's even more gruesome than that.
She doesn't just brain melt them. She makes them point a gun at their head. I do like that when she walks out, Veer's like, fine, I'll think about it. And then Franklin's like, is she different? Or Veer's like, is she good? they look at each other like, why is she like this now? We get more delicious Jakar and Londo content as they're still in the jail cell. And Londo is saying the only way to get through this war is to get to Verini, and the only way he's going to talk to Verini is with the help of supporters, the other ministers. I love Jakar here saying, you picked a terrible moment in your social evolution to develop principles. And he's like, maybe you could develop something more simple, like the moral equivalent of an opposable thumb.
Yeah, because Londo's refusing to leave the jail cell.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very cute. And I love that they can still be funny with each other, mm-hmm. despite the inevitable sad times that are ahead of them and in their current space as well. Mm-hmm. Before this conversation ends, Londo's interrupted by a light from outside. Flash of light, robed people walk inside. These look like aliens they don't look like aliens we've seen before.
Yeah,
they're kind of
they look like the Bith, the guys who play the clarinet.
I literally
Star
was
going
to say they look like the guys playing the clarinet from Star Wars. Wow, nice.
Yeah, there's some Bith-ass looking guys.
Yeah, and there's so he's dragged away. Jakar is left behind, knocked out, and he's taken to an observation room where the Bith, we're just going to call him the Bith, I guess, are talking. And there's one Drock in the corner who's yes, he's worthy. They put stuff on his head, and then they put what we're to assume is some sort of keeper device in his mouth. But
yeah, I don't really understand in light of we'll talk about this when we talk about the second half, but in light of the fact that a keeper's put on him, I don't really understand what the purpose of this scene is.
Yeah. It's most likely just the Drock testing him and being like, yep, he's good, but it could also be something else.
Yeah.
No, I'm not gonna rule that out, basically.
Yeah.
He actually asks the aliens the classic Vorlon and Shadow questions. He says, "Who are you and what do you want with me?" Which felt intentional.
Yeah, that's kind of a twisting of the Shadow question though.
Right. What do you want with
what
me?
Do you want with me? Yeah.
So that was my prediction though, is maybe that's just a testing scene. And then the way that Jakar, this is so perfect. One of the most memorable Jakar Londo scene enders. They need to get out of the jail cell. How are we going to get Londo out of the jail cell? Jakar starts heaving and retching, and Londo's like, "No, please, come on." He's like, "No, what are you thinking about Jakar?"
Because Londo could leave whenever he wants, but he's made this whole production out of I'm not leaving my mans.
Right. In there. Okay, I'll force you out.
Yeah, so he needs to save face, and Jakar decides to puke all over him.
Yeah, he says, I have to get out, but I have to be sure I save face. And it's like, he says it like Londo or Peter Jurassic has just never said that term before.
Yeah. What was the other one that... Oh, it was Sheridan's like, it's like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
It's like...
Another example of people using idioms in ways that it's like, that's a thing people say.
It's just a thing people say. It's not weird.
Yeah.
Jurassic gets to ham it up, though, because Jakar vomits in the cell. And as he gets out, he's like, oh, my God, that's not just the smell. My eyes were going to burn out. Well, hysterical. And then right back into tragedy, because we had enough funny times. Sheridan hosts the Drazi ambassador, the Narn ambassador, and what's the third one? The other guys.
Oh my gosh, what are they called? When they said who they were, I was like, oh, that's what those guys look like. The
Brakiri.
Brakiri.
Good job. Yeah. Is it the Brakiri?
Yeah, it's the Brakiri.
Okay. Their names are Natok, which I'm assuming is the Narn one. Daro, which is the Brakiri one, and Kulamani, who's the... I know Kulamani is the Brakiri one. The only reason I know that is because later, when Natok and Daro speak to each other, I was like, which race are these? I'm trying to, like, remember all the different non-aligned races now. Not that it's ever going to become important, but it's just fun to, like, be able to identify that.
Yeah, if it hasn't become important by now.
I think we're good. But they're agreeing, like, hey, the least we can do right now is get our revenge. Like, we're being attacked. You're not fighting back, and Centauri Prime is vulnerable. We're gonna go take our revenge. Yeah. We get a very brief moment with Lockley and David Corwin. Our boy is back, everyone.
Man, when I saw Corwin's face, I was like, shoot, that guy's handsome.
He's so handsome. Are you kidding me?
He's a good looking guy. I watched the first couple minutes of a panel of Babylon 5 stars reunited.
Yeah.
And at one point, this really handsome dude walks out on stage, and I was like, who is that? And it was Corwin. I was like, dang. And then another really handsome dude walked out. I was like, who is this? And I was like, oh, that's Marcus.
Oh, my God. Ooh. Yeah, a lot of them. The ones, this is sad to say, but the ones that survived aged well. Sorry. I mean, a lot of people on the show died. It's true.
Oh my God, that's awful.
It's sometimes the show is sad in that way, so I don't feel inappropriate here. But
yeah, it's fine. My two takeaways from the scene were like,
sure,
Corwin is pretty hot.
Yep.
And then like, Lockley just doesn't
project
any range of urgency whatsoever. Everything that she says is like, we've got to do this and then do and that, and we got to make sure that they shoot their guns. But everything is that.
The station
almost blew up. A jump gate almost like exploded and destroyed the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she had the same urgency as like, make sure that you put extra mustard on my hot dog.
It's like when I try to yell on a podcast, but I have my parents in the next room and I'm like, I'm mad. I can't go much louder because it does feel like that for some reason. Or it's like when you have a really bad cold and you're like, you like cannot hit a register. I don't know what that is, but that's happened a lot with her.
Yeah.
So Natok and Daro agree that they're going to assault Centauri Prime, which sets off Sheridan because later he hears from Garibaldi that they sent cruisers. And that's the part where he's like, if that's true, Michael, I'll skin him alive. Sheridan, you're not a cowboy. You're not John Crichton. You can't just say things like that.
Yeah, it's like not fun when he gets so mad because you're the president, dude.
Yeah,
this is kind of scary when you get so gung ho.
If anybody still has to be calm, it's you. And like, yeah, the skin of alive thing. Also, like, what are you referencing? Like, colonialists, like American history. Like, what are you doing? Who's stop? skinning people is like a historically frowned upon moment in American history. If you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I'm edgy this week.
Yeah, you are. You're spicy.
I'm really edgy. Sheridan tells the line that Leda and Franklin went to the Drazi homeworld on. For only reason I noted this scene was because he calls it a quote, mission of mercy. which it sounds like a Blues Brothers reference or something. We have a mission with God.
I started quoting, oh my gosh. What's that movie and that play where the salesman...
Death of a Salesman?
No, not Death of a Salesman. Oh my God, Glengarry Glenn Ross.
There, yes, you did. You did say you were.
I'm from Mitch and Murray. I'm on a mission of mercy.
Right.
Right? We've all seen that.
Monologue. Yeah, we've all seen Glengarry. I haven't seen Glengarry Glenn.
It's from the Alec Baldwin monologue, which was just in the movie, by the way, and not in the play.
Really?
Yeah, and then they added it back into the play, I think, afterwards.
It's in the play? Oh, it's not in the play.
It wasn't in the original play, and then it was written for the movie.
No, it isn't.
Oh my God.
I added a new one while we were talking. Oh my
God, stop it.
That one's really useful.
That's a good one to have.
Yeah. That one you get a million points for recognizing. So the Centauri sent an abandoned ship to nuke a jump gate. Oh no, sorry, that's the part we just talked about. I'm sorry. I'm scrolling poorly. We're on the Drowsy homeworld. This is my shit in this episode, man. We have Lita and Franklin, who are a pretty good combo. They're walking through the sad green lighting that is the Drowsy homeworld. And he's like, oh, it's at the same hotel Michael stayed at. He said it's got like the room service is nice, the staff is nice, and it smells good. And she's like, oh, cool. So it smells bad, the service is bad, and the people hate us. And he's like, yeah, that's what I meant. They're obviously being tailed. We're on the same balcony that Garibaldi got attacked on. So like, gets ambushed by his friend on, I guess. I like that they're like, we're back on a whole new planet, and yet we're on the exact same set that we were on in the Garibaldi episode. There's a moment here where Franklin walks out of a room and like pulls his sleeves up and walks out to the balcony, and you said that it looked like him and Lita might have just boned. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they were like fixing themselves or something. There's not enough to, you know, make that leap, but they, you know, they're
adults. They're consenting adults.
Yeah.
In theory. I think it was just him coming out of the shower is what I, when I rewatched it. But
yeah,
there's a knock at the door and it's Dr. Lita Rana Varda, which I don't know why they name a character who's going to get owned in like the next 30 seconds. What are you guys even doing?
Yeah. Also, what is up with the Drowsy, like, brazenly trying to murder the command staff of Babylon 5?
Yeah, why would you trust them if every single time we go there, it's like, yeah, and then we get killed, or we get threatened, or we get shot. Like, stop. It's become a gag now. You go to the Drowsy homeworld and you're going to get a gun pulled on you.
It's just like, what, do they not think that's going to make it back to, like, the president who's friends with these people?
Yeah.
It like just seems so ill-advised.
Like, because who are they working for, right? I guess they're working for the Drock. But
I don't even know. No, I don't think so. I think they were just trying to keep it secret that they have all those Drock eggs.
But like, if there was, but who's telling them to keep them secret is what I'm saying. Like, probably.
I think the Drowsy government.
Oh, okay. But these are technically officials, like government officials who are coming to this planet and being like, there's like attempts on their life, and yet we're still talking to the Drowsy. It feels unrealistic that we're just like, yeah, whatever. They're just assassins. Like, that's fine. Also, I know we're not going to get any consequence to this because it's a good guy doing it. Alita and her like very like sexy leather top. I get that it's like really hot on the Drowsy homeworld, but leather is not appropriate for this moment. But
yeah,
a bunch of assassins were like rappel down into the balcony, and she just goes right up to one of them, realizes what's going on. The guy holds his gun. She just really glares at him all serious. And then he holds his gun up to his head. And then we cut away. We hear,
just hear the sound. Oh my gosh.
And then she, the equivalent of putting a gun to Varda's head, is like, take me to what you're hiding. And it's like, Lita's a fucking stone cold killer.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, holy crap.
We've escalated to this. It's taken 5 seasons of like telepaths being like, we're not going to do a kill. We're not going to do a violence. And then, as of the rebellion, it's like, okay, they will definitely do a violence and they might do a kill. And now we just have Lita.
Yeah, doesn't that kind of go against Byron's whole thing?
Certainly, 100%. Okay. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then Franklin didn't react to that in the way that you would expect Franklin to.
Well, earlier he saw her talking about the money, so he at least knows, like, she's different now. I shouldn't be too surprised when she does stuff, but, like, she killed a guy!
Yeah, but it's Franklin. Like, he wouldn't be like, oh, cool, that's chill. He would have a huge reaction to that, and he would tell somebody.
Yeah, I hope that comes back at some point, that Franklin is like, hey, too. Sheridan, like, buddy.
Yeah.
This Lita thing is a problem, and then Sheridan's like,
no, it isn't.
And it's like, come on, Sheridan, you gotta listen to me, buddy. All right, that's the last time, I promise. I'm sorry.
That's okay. What would he say if Sheridan's first name was a different first name?
No, it isn't.
No, you got a yes and me.
Oh. If he said it was a different name, what would he say?
Like,
say,
if Sheridan had a different first name, how would he address him? Like, if his first name was Robert?
Mm-hmm.
No?
I can't. I got nothing for you.
You pressed the 3 button.
Boggle.
Oh. That one?
Come on. Bobby?
Oh, I don't have a Bobby button. That's a Boggle.
Oh, wait, was it?
It's Boggle.
Oh, Boggle. Oh.
Boggle.
I just thought it was Bobby because he always says Bobby.
Bobby?
Bobby?
Okay, now I get it. I'm sorry. I was confused.
No, I was wrong because you didn't have a Bobby.
No, I was wrong.
No, I was wrong. I was actually wrong.
No, you hang up first. Fuck.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Just to wrap up this stuff, Franklin and Lita are playing, like, good cop, bad cop with Varda, where he's like, if you mess with me, I'll send you, give you back to her, which is such a, like, film noir, like, detective movie thing. He goes to a room, she's like, open up, and then he goes inside, and it's a room not full of bodies, but of centerpieces from IKEA that look like weird black eggs, like out of the Alien movies or something. Mm-hmm. We learn in a minute that this is Shadow Tech, which the viewer knows because... you can hear the, like,
yeah, and because it looks like the shadows, it's like black and scary.
Yeah, and we've understood what this is for many episodes now. But yeah. Later when they report it to Sheridan, they're like, "Yep." So they have remote controls. If they put these on ships, they can put like 4 or 5 of them on like a cruiser, and the cruiser can run itself. They're basically remote controls for space tech. So they put them on there instead of Centauri, and that's how they're making like all these bombs, and how they're not actually sacrificing people. They're just fighting without people.
Yeah.
Is this like a drones plot, I guess?
They
discovered that the shadows have drones?
Well, I think it's just supposed to be like, oh, the shadow tech is scary and they are able to control things at long range the way that they used like telepaths. I couldn't tell if this was supposed to be like a more advanced version of the tech or like a less advanced, or just kind of a, like, is this a Drock innovation, you know?
I sort of saw it as the shadow equivalent of the telepath bodies being used to power ships last season. But wasn't that also the shadows?
Yeah, that was the shadows. Yeah.
So the shadows just like to, yeah, they like to, it is maybe like an evolution of that.
I would guess that this is the Drock being like, how do we make this an even simpler technology where we don't need telepaths to do it
right.
for us?
Right, right, right.
That's my guess. And the thing that's interesting is that there were conversations that were had earlier in the episode with the non-aligned aliens of like Sheridan saying, okay, so how's the fighting with the Centauri going? And they're all like, yeah, we're fucking crushing them. We're doing great.
Dude, we're winning.
And he's like, okay, so what's their strategy? Well, we don't know, but we're doing awesome. they're not beating us. And then he talks to the Narn guy, and he's like, you know, the Centauri, is this weird for them? And the Narn guy goes,
no, it isn't.
He goes, I don't know, actually. It seems kind of weird because what was happening is that there would be like one half of the fleet that was attacking and one half that wasn't. What we learned in the second episode is that, the Drock are so brilliant, dude.
Yeah, they're very good.
They're creating this deniability where, like, a football coach is what I like to call him, the head of the defense ministry that Londo tries to get on his side. And he's like, the Ministry of Defense isn't with you. And come with me, my beautiful sons, as I leave the room. Those guys think that they're on the defensive for real.
Right.
And the Drak and Verini are the only ones who know that, like, these other ships are attacking, and there are no Centauri on board. But, like, none of the aliens thought that that was weird. It's just so smart.
Right, because they're like, wow, they're unpredictable. Their plan is, like, completely, we can't guess at any of it. What could it possibly be? And it's as simple as, like, we found technology that does our job for us. We don't have to, you know, hire genius technicians anymore or sacrifice any more bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot darker than I think this episode has time to come to, like, talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really fascinating that they're just like, yep, they did kind of drop that. And also funny that, once again, they're ambushed when they're running out of air. And nobody talks about this, but Varda totally just gets fucking gunned down as they leave. And it's like, bye, you're done. No worries about that guy. As we get into the juiciest stuff in this episode, Londo's sitting down with Verini, who tells him this is probably the last time we're going to talk to each other, which is really sad. And Ladir and Delenn's ship was attacked before this by multiple Centauri cruisers. It seems like they're going to be fine, and the two of them somehow survived, but they are just about out of hyperspace range, and also the comms aren't working. And Delenn's like, shit, Lanier, that really sucks. And he's like, also my leg is broken in two pieces. And she's like, shit, Lanier, that really sucks. This ain't good. And things are not good anywhere else, because Verini breaks everything down for Londo and tells him that peace is not coming. This is a great performance from the guy who plays Verini. Because it's so quiet. It's so, like, subdued. And it's him just being like, yep, this has been a bit for a while. I'll be gone tomorrow. And hey, you know what else is going to happen tomorrow? You're going to be crowned the next emperor. They told me that. And he's like, who's they? And he's like, you'll know at some point.
You'll figure it out.
Don't rush your last free hours, which...
Just relax.
Considering the second episode, him saying these are your last free hours is bleak! Yeah, Verini says this is the last... He has one more thing he's going to do for the Drak. And Londa's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, I sent away all the ships that were guarding Centauri Prime on a false emergency. Also, I turned off the defense network.
Then there's this super cheesy moment where Londo starts to slowly back away.
It's hilarious.
He does it too slowly, and it looks like he's in Scooby-Doo or something.
It's like a Simpsons guy. It's like the Homer into the bushes or whatever.
Yeah. It's just, the shot is a little too wide, and it just doesn't cut or anything. So he's literally like... backing away, and then it cuts to him and he like screams like
no! That no is amazing. That's a very good no.
It's a good one.
Because Verini's like, I think I'll stay and watch from here. The sky should be lighting up any time now. I imagine it'll be quite beautiful. I love that way, like, Verini takes a breath after every other word. It's very like you want to, like, hang on to all of it. But Londo's like, I gotta get the hell out of Dodge. He gets, like, lost in the palace for a couple of seconds. He's like, which one's the bathroom? I don't know how to get out of here. And then he looks up, and we wrap on a pretty corny shot of all of the ships, the Narn and the Drazi ships, flying over Centauri Prime and beginning their assault. The reason it's corny is we get a zoom in on Londo's face, like, visions of people attacking my planet. Then we get Verini being like, I'm dead. And then we get Jakar, who's just been spending this whole scene writing in his book, like, I gotta finish this book. And that's how we end the episode, is the Narn and the Drazi are now assaulting Centauri Prime. Sheridan probably isn't gonna get here in time, guys.
Yeah, we're just doomed.
It's really funny to think, like, Sheridan is attempting, he's doing his best to assert control in this moment, but we learn immediately in the next episode that he's not even close. Because he's like, give me all the White Stars, give me Garibaldi, give me the fastest ships, I'm going to get there in time, I'm going to beat them, how much time do I have? And Garibaldi's like, you're probably not going to.
He doesn't skin him alive or anything. He doesn't even follow up or, like, get mad at those dudes, right? They don't seem to get punished for doing
that. Not in this episode, no. Well, I think they're independent enough that he's like, I can't. You guys made this decision on your own. I'm not like your dad.
Yeah.
But it is still against, like, what he wanted, I guess, so he would be angry. But yeah, that's where we're left with this episode. It's bleak. Seriously, I think the adjective for season 5 of B5 is, like, bleak or
Yeah, I mean the show. That's one of the key
editors. True, ultimately. Yeah. But yeah, that's what we got for this one, John. Any stray notes, my friend?
I don't think so. No, I think we covered everything.
Cool. Cool. I can pull back the curtain now and tell folks that we actually did record our part two first. So we did our emails in part two. So you'll hear that after this brief musical break.
As we did? Those were all our emails?
That was all the emails. Oh. Yeah. Sorry. I was like going to save some, but then it was like, we didn't actually get that many. It's okay. It's a good email segment. I promise you folks. We're joined by a guest after this musical break to discuss the fall of Centauri Prime.
Welcome back to Chatsalon 5. The second episode we watched this week was Season 5, Episode 18, The Fall of Centauri Prime. Or Centauri Prime.
Centauri Prime.
Yeah, Centauri, however he says it. It was written by J. Michael Straczynski, directed by Douglas E. Wise. It aired October 28, 1998, and it takes place from August 14th to August 18th of 2262. Alan, what happened in the fall of Centauri Prime?
Alan. Well, sir, in this episode, between the weapons of the Alliance and the threats of the Drak, the fate of Centauri Prime is decided. Delenn and Lanier are stranded in hyperspace. Now, Magellan, there's a man in our midst tonight that we enlisted to help us discuss the fall of Centauri Prime. He has been many things in our lives, Magellan. He has been silly. He's been quiet when he should have spoken. He has been foolish, and he's wasted far too much time. But he is still Centauri, and I am not afraid of Nick. Welcome, Nick, to the show.
Thanks, guys, for that awesome intro. Thanks for having me.
Word on the street is you have an intro for us. Can you introduce us now?
Oh, I don't know if it's going to be as good.
I'm sure. If you don't want to, you don't have to.
No, I'll try that. My intro would have been a friendship so powerful that it made a podcast so incredible that the archives of humanity in a million years will firstly include the Chats Pod Clockstoppers commentary. It's the Chats Boys. I tried to see because how many C's I can fit into that one, but hopefully it flowed.
You're a regular Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, folks, Nick is here, the other half of the Brothers at War. We've now had Nick and Pat together. We have a full set.
All of the primordial forces have been assembled.
Yeah.
Now the gate to the netherworld has opened.
We've delayed the apocalypse by one more day.
I thought it was something good that would happen. I didn't realize I was bringing up the end times.
No, at this point, maybe the end times.
The end times are just the beginning times viewed from the other side.
Thanks, Magellan the Vorlon.
Glass half full, kind of thinking.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I'm an ice lady half full kind of Vorlon.
Oh my god, remember the Ice Lady?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's a cool show.
So Nick, you're the other brother. One might say the first
the brother from the same mother, you could argue.
One might say that. One might just say that. I want to ask you what I ask all of our guests, which is, what is your history with Babylon 5, completely separate from Pat's, and why did you choose to discuss the fall of Centauri Prime with us today?
It's like, do I just play an MP3 what he said?
Can I just drop that in?
Yeah, just drop it in. I mean, yeah, what Pat said about us always watching sci-fi as kids there, but I mean, we heard about the B5 pilot, this TV movie, and we checked it out, and it was kind of neat, and you know, liked it enough, but of course then we heard it was a series, and you know, we did stick with it through its initial run, but certainly season 4 was a big... quite the highlight for it as far as popularity. You know, we played the card games and it was, I know Pat said, like, you know, one of the stations playing all the episodes to catch up before season 5, and they had a launch party on the station because it was that much of a hype that there was a season 5. But I think I kind of re-got back into it because in college they started dropping the DVD sets. And I was like, ooh, okay, I have my limited college budget. That's going to go first. And kind of got them as soon as possible and shared amongst friends. So luckily enough, we didn't have like a really terrible release schedule like Ryan had in Australia there.
Oh my God, New Zealand.
Yeah,
and then so what led you to choose the Fox and Tari Prime? Are you also a fan of Tragic Londo?
Tragic Londo is the best Londo. I mean, because he is obviously the character that started it off, right? He was in the pilot. I can think other than just him and Garibaldi, well, I guess Lita as well, but more. I think Londo, you know, JMS did say about the Londo being the. The story of Londo is almost the real story for Battlefront 5. But yeah, no, I mean, I'd sent an email to you guys just saying like, okay, well, you've mentioned me being on the show. Like, how do I decide which one to be on? And I just looked up the IMDb ranking. Like, what's the lowest rated and what's the highest rated? I'll pick one of the two. And then you're like, no, just go with the good one. Like,
yeah,
okay,
take the high one.
The low
one
was
the lowest rated again?
The lowest one was the where Franklin is dealing with the species that is hiding that they wiped out their cousin.
Oh, yeah.
Species.
Oh.
And Lita and Byron, you know, do the thing.
Yeah.
That's the low one.
Yeah.
Which I think there could have been still plenty. There's enough said on your episode about that anyways.
Certainly, right. And actually, speaking of emails, I forgot to mention this in our actual email segment, but your brother wants you to read this email. So... it starts, hey, in case you have Nick reading emails, here is some more fan fiction. So I'm going to just paste this in the chat for you to read. You can have fun with this.
After years in a coma, a ranger of the Atlas Shock awakens to find himself under the protection of the Psi-Corps. During the war with the Shadows and his injuries during battle, he finds he has awakened his latent telepathy. Now he must be trained under the tutelage of Psi-Corps' best, Alfred Bester. What Bester doesn't know is that this new trainee has a skill in making dust and is selling it in secret while leading the investigation astray. Bryan Cranston as Trainee Erickson. It's breaking Bester. Then please make the Breaking Bad opening music sounds with your mouth.
Bow,
yeah, it's been a while since I've watched Breaking Bad there, so I was like, I could have pulled it off, but thanks, Pat. That was nice.
Love the sibling goodness. You also actually sent us a brief email that I can read since you're here, just saying catching up on Chatspender. Hey, I remember that season. Dax writing in to say the "Who are you and what do you want" line from Iroh is a B5 reference, one of his favorite shows, and yet no Dax comments on Chatslon 5, so I assume he's no longer listening. Which makes us both sad, but he hopes that you hope that he finds the show again one day.
Maybe he'll remember, hey, remember that show I used to watch? Oh, look, they're doing Babylon 5.
They're doing it. Yeah, that's the ideal future. I assume, I can't really assume anything about anyone's personal life, but Dax seemed like a very busy guy, and he had a hard situation at work, so he's probably just too busy to listen right now, but I'm sure he's doing okay. And if you have a chance, Dax, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. The people miss you. The people are here missing you right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm re-listening and I'm missing. Oh, where is he? Where is he? He would have been loving this.
But anyways, we can now get into our discussion of the Fallout Centauri Prime.
Let's do it.
I don't have a lot of intense notes on this one, but it really is a part two because we get a straight up previously on, which we really don't see a lot on Babylon 5.
No, and I don't know. Did you say that? The air date, I don't know if you made note of it, the fact that this one was 4 months.
Whoa, yeah, one. June 17th of Movements of Fire and then October 28th, yeah.
Yeah, just terrible summer. I wouldn't say it's as, I remember watching Next Generation Star Trek and, the Best of Both Worlds cliffhanger. That was probably worse of a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But this was a close second because you're I know what they're shooting at the end of the last episode. So it's not like there's a mystery, but I'm just... Yeah, I was darn curious to know what would happen next.
Yeah, you just want to see it.
Exactly. What? How dare you end there? But yeah, that was true. Yeah, you don't see the previously on. And I think it was when I was looking at the behind-the-scenes stuff, and I think they said they already had planned to do the previously on even before there was that big gap. because he just there was so like it is a series of episodes that is like so tied to each other. Mm-hmm. Even though this is definitely a part two, it's still very much connected to the other ones.
Right, and all of the tension that's building in part one starts to unravel in this one, and we're left with just kind of a barren wasteland of sadness and power struggle and the shifting of responsibility. We start out with Sheridan not arriving in time to stop the Alliance ships from bombarding Centauri Prime. So the capital city is hit. I have like a lot of scenes that I want to talk about. So the first scene that I like remember being really important was Verini's last moments. I just want to say, Minister Verini, shout outs to a real one. Shout outs to a man who started out as just a funny gag Centauri character who were like, oh my god, like he's so cute and like he's a funny old guy, and he brings it. He brings the Shakespearean sadness in this like death scene that I was floored by.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, it's the man who's just not all there anymore. Like,
right.
You know, the only other time we've seen somebody that wasn't in the, you know, a jump forward in time that had one of these keepers on them was Captain Jack, and he seemed, you know, okay, he's giving secret messages, but he's acting normal otherwise. I don't know what the difference is that the region here is just so much more farther gone. But what I thought was interesting was just the fact that I don't know when they hired him for season four, right? Like, they didn't know, I guess, at that point that he would need to be actually delivering this kind of performance. And it's just great that he was, he had it in him. He was able to pull it off, because mm-hmm. you hire an actor to say, oh, just be kind of this silly kind of minister that everyone thinks fondly of. So you're just the easy one to be the regent and no one's going to think anything wrong about that. But then go, okay, now I need you to do a totally different performance. Can you do it? And he's like, well, like, I guess we'll see. But he did a great job. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's amazing. His whole thing about like the world has gone past me, and it's like it's him realizing like, oh, the war is gonna keep going on, and this is gonna keep getting worse, and it's gonna be your fault, Londo. Like, this is now, I'm giving this to you, both as a sort of puppet for the Drak, and also just as like Verini himself being like, yep, this is all FUBAR. Like, this is all screwed. They have control. You have no options here. Me as a viewer, I really like to, in scenes like this, in like the moments where Verini's telling Londo, like, here's how the Drak are going to subjugate the Centauri once and for all, I always try to like find the solution for how the show is going to get out of this, because I really don't know if Babylon 5 is really going to end the Centauri plotline on, and then the Drak just took over and that's how it ended. Like, Londo just has the Keeper on. Obviously, we know from the beginning that he is going to keep the Keeper on for his entire adult life, unless they change the timeline. Am I accurate in that presumption?
It seems that way, right? Like, we have seen him pretty far flung into the future, and he's still chilling with it.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't contradict that. It's not perfect, but I'll talk about that after.
Sure.
When Alan and I finished watching this episode, I was like, well, oh man, there's only four episodes left. How do we resolve this Londo thing? And Alan was like, they don't have to. Like, this is just his fate. He's just doomed.
Yeah, the real sad thing about the way this episode plays out is it's not like a Shadow War thing where it's like, well, if we don't beat them, then we're like, they're going to nuke us or they're going to destroy us. Like, people are going to die. This is like, yeah, people who died are already dead. Like, they're kind of just going to take over and then rule for a while. They probably are going to like start another war way down the line, but that's not going to happen in the scale of the show. So this might just be it. Londo might have just lost, period.
I think it's safe to say he lost.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to swallow, because like the lens says towards the end of the episode, because Zach Allen walks in and is like, guys, like, the war is over. We won. Like, we won the war, guys. And everyone is just crestfallen because, like, this is a war that was won at the cost of a civilization's entire like autonomy and the lives of millions. So,
yeah, I mean, it wasn't the planet destroyed, but it was, you know, one of the obviously it's not the first ones, but one of the great higher powered prestigious races severely crippled at that point.
Yeah, I believe it's in this episode that there was a hint at something else going on, because Londo has a dream when he's in the prison cell with Jakar that aliens are like probing at his head and putting things inside of him. I assumed that that was either him. Well, Magellan was like, while we were watching, it was like, that's the Keeper thing. Like, that's it happening. But then it happens to him later in real life, suggesting that that dream is either prophetic or something else. Because the aliens in that dream are not the Drak.
Right, but there is, the Drak does show up and saying, like, guess you'll do, or something like that. Like, I always took that as being, like, your health check to make sure that he wasn't going to be a problem for the Keeper.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that that's, like, not necessary, but they decided to do it anyways.
Yeah.
Maybe
creepy.
They did it for...
Their fingers were gross.
Yes, because they're all the same length, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not grasping things very good, but let's put them in charge of surgery.
Mm-hmm. And as we watch Londo continue to suffer tragedy after tragedy, what really got to me, what really, like, put a pit in my stomach is the fact that, like, he's being forgiven by the powers that be mostly in this episode. Like, he's not... Everyone kind of leaves him, but we also get this, like... Honestly, maybe the most touching Jakar Londo scene of the entire series. I wish I was able to pull some lines from this one. I don't know if you have any, Nick, but the scene where Jakar tells Londo that he forgives him when they're in the jail cell, and then they briefly touch, and then they leave to do their things, is like top tier
content.
They touch,
but like, you know, Londo's like embracing him, but like with his arm kind of extended, like to hold him also back at the same time, right?
Yeah, it's not a like, hug. It's not like a friend.
It's not a hug. It's just that moment of just a distant embrace, I guess. Because, you know, he is clearly saying, you know, you're going to hear things about my behavior. And, you know, Jakar saying, like, I know, I understand. He's perhaps you don't understand as much as you think you do, because he doesn't want to tell him what the real truth is, because that would put him under risk as well. Probably he wouldn't have made it off the planet if he had told him, right?
Right.
And the one thing I say I don't like about that scene, and it's just like a nitpick, is there's this one part where the camera pans over and Jakar's sitting on the bed or bench or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's a painting behind him on the wall that's askew. It's crooked. But the way it's framed, it almost gives like the unintentional Dutch angle. It's like, this is supposed to be framed straight, but because the angle of it, it makes him look like he's on
yeah
the angle.
That was interesting.
It just like it threw me off. I even after rewatching it, like I was still like, ugh.
Was there something up with Jakar's like makeup in that scene?
Oh yeah, because his eyes are like way more red, and his face
his eyes are red and his skin is all pale, or I don't know if it was the lighting or the makeup, or he was covered in dust or something. It was also kind of a jarring thing in this moment where he's like, I forgive you, but you like look sickly, Jakar. I like don't recognize you right now.
I didn't actually notice that. That's a good point, though. Now that I think about it, yeah. I don't know if this is because he got a roof fell on him in the prison cell, and so he's just a little bit winded.
Right. Oh, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, that's a very crooked painting. Jeebus.
But it's not just that it's crooked. It's that it's framed and it's zoomed in enough that it makes you think the whole frame is on an angle. And
you get
the
turn your head
Dutch
a little,
angle.
Yeah.
Like, something's off. Well, I know it's off. I don't need the Dutch angle.
I just couldn't get over the like eye performances from Jurassic and Katsoulis in that scene, because it looks like they're both a millisecond away from crying. You see Londo like swallowing tears, you know, just choking back all of his sadness, and Jakar is just very respectfully like looking at him, trying to maintain a straight face.
Yeah, I have the advantage of the DVD commentary, so I can kind of just pull tidbits from JMS, because he did that episode, and him saying like, yeah, that when they were saying those lines, it was, you know, break, you know, everyone was wanting to break into tears, including Peter.
And he almost did.
Yeah. You can see him like just holding it back. And he said, no, those were real, you know, emotions kind of come through. It wasn't just a performance. But I think one of the things he also mentioned was that, you know, season 4 ended and they were having their wrap party, not expecting a season 5. And Peter had obviously been around for the length since the pilot had said to JMS, like, you know, it's interesting is that Londo started off with none of the power but all the freedom, and now he's got not all the power but none of the freedom, right?
Yes.
Like it's, and so he's, oh, that's fantastic. And then when he had a season 5, he's like, oh, great, I'm going to be able to use that line. So that's a little Peter input.
Right, yeah. Right? A lot of Londo's like interiority in this episode is just coming to acknowledge that conclusion. Like, there's the scene very early in the episode where he's talking to the jock, and he finally, like, you have the black and white flashbacks to the mm-hmm. scene where Morden is being dragged out, and he's like, they're gonna come back for you.
Yeah, I love that, because it took away, like, that triumph moment of, mm-hmm. like, first it was like, okay, the thing that your trick that you did to get our masses off is what we're gonna use to push you, you know, step on you like a button.
Oh man, yeah, when they're holding the button, you're like, fuck.
Although it is kind of silly when he pulls up that button out of frame. It just kind of looks silly.
It looks dumb. Like, it looks like a James Bond villain kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Symbolically, it is very...
Well, Mr. Malari, I have this detonator.
I expect you to die.
There's something about the guy, the look of the guy under the Drock makeup.
You know what it is?
Was I supposed to recognize him? Have I seen him before?
So, Wayne Alexander...
He looked like Lorien or something.
He did. Lorien. Yeah, Lorien, it is him. Yeah, Wayne Alexander. Okay. Yeah, again, JMS kind of calling him with his infield ace or whatever. He made a baseball reference that I'm messing up now. But yeah, Wayne Alexander kind of just shows up all the time. It's different. So he was obviously
It only just now clicked. I was like, why do his eyes seem so kind, but he's evil?
he's got Lorien eyes. That's why.
Yeah. He's the god of everything who's nice to me.
Yeah.
He's just everywhere. He was even on Hypernauts, which is like half the cast.
Oh, hell yeah. Miss Hypernauts. Watch me more Hypernauts.
There's a whole weird Venn diagram of like how many people showed up on Hypernauts that were on B5, especially seasons 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Bless.
What I really liked about that was not just like, they're using his own, move against him. The fact that Morden even said, like, even if the shadows fall, they have allies and they'll make their revenge. And it literally is that. But like, we know they could have just put the keeper on him whenever they wanted, right? They didn't.
Right.
They made the point to like twist it a little bit and saying like, no, you're going to voluntarily do this because of what we have over you, and it's going to torture you as well, the fact that you have that risk against your own people.
Yeah, it's so... The like bombs all over Centauri Prime was such a surprise to me, because I was like, oh, okay, they have the keeper that's going to like control him all the time. So that's how they're going to, make sure that he does what they want him to do. And so it totally... Yeah, caught me that they actually have two like fail-safe mechanisms to make sure that their plan goes off without a hitch. And then what also struck me was the lucidity with which Verini was like, hey, okay, like here are our options. We have one option and we're going to follow it exactly. And we're just going to have to do it. Like the whole Verini being crazy thing has been an act the whole time. And now Londo, every single choice that he's making from here on out, we can't sort of brush it away and say like, oh, he's just being mind controlled by a bug on his chest. Like,
nope, he chose it.
He's like picking all of those words when he gives his crazy speech, is like, nationalistic. He's basically becoming a Hitler figure, you could say, because it's like post-World War I Germany having to pay reparations and like we're great and we're going to be great again and blah blah blah,
right?
He like all that is in Londo. He has that script and he's just doing it. It sort of gave me the same feeling as when he busted into the Alliance chamber when they were talking about blaming the Centauri for the attacks on the shipping lines. Yeah. And he kind of dropped into like season one ambassador Londo of how could you possibly do this to us, blah 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 blah. That's still him, and all of the choices that he makes, even though he doesn't have options, they're still choices that he's like carrying out with full lucidity and conscience of what he's doing.
He's still an imperialist trying not to be, but he still is. Right?
Yeah, like it's so easy for him to play that part because he's been that for so long.
It's all he knows how to do at this point, or it's one of the things that he's best at doing is playing that character, right? And we see
admittingly,
him
like in a universe where you didn't have all these galactic shifting changes in power, like he was like bred, if you want to say, raised to live in the imperial court, right? Like mm-hmm. he had a fall for grace that he got the joke appointment on Babylon 5, but like, if not for that, he's, you know, he could have easily been one of the high ministers and stuff like that and just been totally part of the system. Only because he went to Babylon 5, kind of sat outside of it, then he kind of got that outside opinion on it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's, oh, go ahead.
No, I just want to interject to say that the comedy of him coming out of that scene and then going to the Drak who puts the keeper on him, and the way the Drak unleashes the keeper from his like nipple clamp was really jarring to me. Like, this episode is still a Babylon 5 episode, so like the effects are corny, and it's just like, you read like Londo gets a keeper inserted into him by his own choice, and that's like beautiful and heartbreaking. But then you see what the keeper placement is, and it's like black tentacles are gonna just kind of hover on your shirt, and then you're gonna be possessed. It's like not as scary as it actually is.
And I think it also helps to kind of explain better that like it's the symbiotic part of the Drak. Like, it's not just a technology, like other shadow tech that we've seen, like in the last episode.
Yeah.
The eggs. That it's part of the Drak. That's kind of their benefit. I think Jameis even said that the idea that they have more than one on their body, that they can have more than one. But that they always have that kind of connection. They're always kind of aware of what the keeper's seeing as well.
Hmm. Yeah, it's right inside of you. And he has these sad conversations with Sheridan, and then he calls Babylon 5 and tells him to come visit. We kept commenting while watching this how, speaking of dumb effects, whenever somebody calls in to CNC on Babylon 5 lately, they like zoom in the camera a little bit too much.
Oh my god, it looked stupid.
Every time it's like Sheridan, I'm here with a message, but like the camera is way too close to their face, and the resolution of the video file is like way too low, and it's like, this looks very bad for what you'd like to convey an important message. That was just a thing that didn't stop bothering me as I was watching these episodes. Was like, I'm trying to be heartbroken, and you're giving me these like Windows 98 video effects. It's not working for me. Because then
if they stop talking for too long, you get those little pipe screensaver kind of pops on, you know, from 98.
Right. Yeah. You get like the...
Oh, I forgot about that. I never thought I'd see that mental image again in my life.
The screensaver?
The 3D pipes thing.
3D pipes was awesome. It was mesmerizing. Whoever made those...
Yeah, that was a good one.
I like the maze one a lot. The maze one was my favorite. Because it looked like... I was like, I want to play this game, but it's not a maze that can be finished. One of them was like, it would be walking through a maze in first person, but it was an impossible maze.
It was like Wolfenstein original style.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right.
I don't want to talk about the Lanier and Delenn stuff until the very end, so I'll just...
I thought you were going to say you don't want to talk about it at all.
I kind of don't, just because it makes me frustrated, but we'll keep rolling on Team Londo. He goes back to B5, and he runs into Veer again. Or no, he doesn't go back to B5. Veer comes on to Centauri Veer Prime.
Veer shows up, and he's like, hey, I heard that...
Like, I heard everything got fucked, destroyed.
Bro. Are you good? And Londo's like, what are you? Don't come into my room. Why did you just come in here?
I'm crying. And he's like, I used to always come in your room and we would like talk about boys and stuff. And it was great. And he's like, No.
We're not friends anymore.
And it's not. This is so sad. I can't take all this tragedy. Don't be mean to Veer, you guys. He's just a harmless man.
Yeah.
The people are tired, resentful, and angry. Angry at what has happened. Angry at the Alliance, at you, at everyone. So he's dealing with an angry Republic right now. And it's like, yep, that's the keys you are handed. Like, basically, Verini handed him a smoldering, like, semi-nuclear vehicle and was like, here's your new car. Have fun.
And you gotta have to wonder, like, obviously we know that how his life ends with Jirkar and something like that. Like, you gotta wonder, like, what are the history books of the Centauri gonna write about him? Like, was he just this terrible emperor that let the cities burn for decades or whatever it was? And does he get like a little, oh, by the way, there was a alien influence all those times. Like, he could have been better, but he just couldn't, you know, he was held back.
Yeah, right.
I will say that it bothers me because I go, can't cities really stay on fire for like, what is it, 17 years? I think I looked it up. Can they really stay on fire that long? I mean, even the reparations, like, oh, the fire department has lost its budget. Like,
eventually, you know, everything burns. Yeah.
Eventually, you're going to run out of stuff to burn. The only thing I can think of is that if you actually had something burn for that long, like, I'm thinking that's a comet or asteroid hit the planet. It's burning the forests of the world, and now you have nuclear winter style effects, which it obviously didn't. But that's the only time I can think of like a really multi-year fire would it be possible. So I don't know. I understand why JMS did it that way, and it connects the dot, but it just didn't make sense.
Well, there's that one town in Pennsylvania that's been on fire since 1980 or whatever. Centralia, Pennsylvania.
Isn't that like, it's the mine that's on fire, right?
Yeah, underground.
But that's got like a continual fuel source of the methane or whatever natural gases are fueling it. Yeah. Or the Simpsons tires that are perpetually on fire.
The tire fire in Springfield Hill, yeah.
Oh my gosh, why did Centauri Prime make all its money with disposed tires? Now they're all on fire.
Why we made all of our buildings? We fools! And then...
Okay,
so
I'm sorry. I have to apologize to JMS now. Now it's secretly brilliant.
I knew it all along. And more tragedy, just more and more. We're piling on basically people coming to Londo and being like, hey, we were your only friends and we can't work with you anymore. You're like out of the friend group. You're out of the group chat. Mm-hmm. You're out of the alliance and you're out of friends. So Sheridan, Delenn.
Even worse, there's a new group chat that you're not included. We're just talking bad about.
Yeah, it's called the Not Londo chat. You're not allowed inside. Delenn, who's now safe and alive, is with him. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, bud.
Well, I will say that their reaction to Londo... you're getting us to that moment, so you just get us to that moment.
Basically, she's okay. Sheridan's here, Vera's here, and Jakar is here, and they all witness him doing his speech to all of Centauri Prime.
They're all like, "Hey, won't it be so cool to see our friend like get what he's always wanted? We love that guy. Let's peek out the window and see." Oh no! Oh boy!
Oh no! Oh geez! Oh, he's surrounded by smoke too. Oh, he's bad now, guys.
Yeah.
But
their reaction to it, they're not like mad and they're not like, what are you doing? They all know that something is wrong, it seems like.
Yeah.
Because Jakar, from earlier, when Londo's like, pray that you never understand, Jakar, pray that you never figure out what's happening to me, which is to say that I have a little monster that's keeping me from being myself. Do you understand what I'm saying, Jakar? Do you get it? I hope you don't get it, but here's what you need to get. That there's a bad, bad thing happening right now. Wink. So Jakar knows what's up. Veer knows that something's wrong. And Sheridan and Delenn are both like, oof. Hey, if you ever need anything, buddy, let us know, okay? We'll be here for you.
But he's beyond help at this point. This is exactly why I was like... If the show ends with Londo like this, then I won't be stunned by that. I won't be like disappointed by that, because at some point it's like someone else has to fix this. Like them coming in and fixing this at this point is like more dangerous than it is good.
It's the best ending for Londo, because like he's personally redeemed, but his people are entirely doomed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even you go back to the Kosh saying with the Centauri that they're
a dying race.
Dying race, let them die or let them fade away. And I'm gonna steal this from the Lurker's Guide, because it was the if you guys remember Lady Mirella, she gave her kind of prophecy, right?
Yes.
And then saying like, you'll have to face your greatest fear, knowing it will destroy you in order to save his people, is him just giving up all the control, right? Like it's. Kind of, it wasn't a perfect tie-in, but it was close enough that I think people can kind of go, oh, hey, she was right. I'm like, yeah, close enough.
That's the best. Yeah. That's the best kind of prophecy you can get in something like this, is where when you backfill it, you go, oh yeah, that does kind of work, but in the moment it doesn't feel like it's anything.
It could have been a lot of different things, and you could have still said, oh yeah. It just happened to fit.
Any character in a story is going to face their greatest fear.
Right.
Like, that's just how stories go.
She's her other prophecy. You'll have the perfect Sunday, followed by the worst weekend. You know, like
you will go on a bit of a hero's journey. You'll start in the familiar, and then go to the unfamiliar, and then return to the familiar, having been changed. Whoa!
Oh my God.
How'd she predict that?
Kind of to like Peter just looking at the script directly going, oh yeah, you're right.
This is so deep.
Wow, she nailed it. So what you're saying is that TV prophecies are like horoscopes? It's just like,
yeah, basically.
You're going to go on a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole speech is really sad. And like you said, it's not like warmongering. It's not like we're going to go to war with the Alliance. It's like we're breaking up with them. We're not involved with them anymore. We have to pay them. It's going to hurt us. Like, I want you, the Centauri people, to have like this fuel in your hearts to know that like we will rise up again one day and we will reclaim our throne. But for now, we're in the background. We have fallen. Truly sad.
And the whole time the Drak guy's watching this like, nice.
Nice, nice. I wrote that.
Yes, this is good.
Wow, this is a beautiful script. Who wrote it? Oh, me? Oh, nice, dude.
Or it's like he just said, you know, I just told Londo to just go out there and say something ridiculous. And he said, wow, you know what? I don't have to control him as much as I thought. He has some pretty
improvised all
wow,
of this.
Wow, this dude's a real shitheel. Oh, my gosh.
I didn't even have to do anything. That's the real sadness
maybe,
of this.
Maybe he secretly hates himself. This is even better than I could
have
thought.
Wow, easy. Yeah. And then the show pulls what I think is arguably emotionally manipulative move, but I love it, which is everyone walks out on him, and then Londo looks out the window, and then we get a smash cut of all of Londo Mollari's best funny moments on Babylon 5.
I know, oh my god, yeah.
It's like him falling over the table in the first episode. It's him and Adira kissing. It's like him and Jakar in The Gathering, I believe. And then it's him looking out on the Narn homeworld. Like,
or no, I think in the moment we thought that was The Gathering, but I think actually it was that when Jakar had like talked to the Centauri Emperor and was like, oh, maybe you guys are cool, here, I bought you a drink.
Oh, that part. And then and
Londo had already set into motion like the horrible events of his life.
Yes, that part, you're right. Yeah. And then he has all these great moments, and then you see him and Jakar like strangling each other in the future, and then he walks out to greet the Centauri people. And I expected this part. I didn't expect this to be like to hit me as hard as it did, but he walks out to a ruined like plaza and it's completely empty.
Yeah.
It's not to say that there are no Centauri left. It's that there's no one here to watch his coronation. He's just alone. Veer has
the
left.
The only person there
left
is the person ringing the bell for every death.
Right, yeah. Right. They're like, we have to ring a bell for every death. And Magellan and I were joking during the episode, like, who pays that guy? If they don't have money, then, like, what does he do?
Is there such a thing as a Centauri monk who just lives in the chapel?
Probably. I guess that must be what it is. Yeah. That would have been an appropriate, like, final moment. But then the show is like, oh, wait, it's Babylon 5. We're not allowed to end once. We have to end at least 5 more times.
Yeah.
So then we get the rest of the council picking up one of the eggs from the previous episode, and they're like, yeah, this Londo stuff's kind of fucky. Anyways, we won, right? Huh. And then Zach comes in, he's like, guys, we won, we're all partying. And they're like, Zach, please no. Please not now.
Yeah.
I want to say something quickly that you guys mentioned in the last episode about Zach, because you're saying, like, you know, he never really reveled in being a person of authority. And, like, I had, like, this weird, like, thought, like, was that on purpose that Garibaldi put his number 2 as someone who wouldn't strive for authority, and he kind of just defaulted in his spot? Because, like, after his other previous number 1 right-hand man shot him in the back, he's like, well, I'm not making that mistake twice. I'm going to make sure I have a kind of a, you know, he can be tough when he needs to be, but I'm not going to have to watch my back.
Just a very agreeable boy.
A humble number 2, right.
And then he just kind of defaulted into it because Bester got him to quit.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That sounds right to me. I'm like having trouble remembering we're recording the second half before we record the first half. So I'm having trouble remembering was there Garibaldi and Lita stuff in this one, or Franklin and Lita stuff in this one? Or
Garibaldi,
did they mostly finish their mission last time?
Garibaldi just kind of showed up to say, like, hey, Delenn's ship didn't arrive.
Right.
So we don't know where she is. And then Sheridan's kind of like going to have to commit to going to Centauri rather than go look for her.
Yeah. And then did Lita and Franklin find the eggs last time?
That was last time.
Last episode, yeah.
Okay.
The only B plot in this episode, and it occupies so little screen time and frustrated me so deeply that I don't even want to talk about it for long, but Delenn and Lanier are caught in hyperspace. At this point, Delenn is basically presumed dead. Everyone's really sad to hear that. Just like
when
she...
I think by the end, Lanier is dead on the inside.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, completely. And
Also, Sheridan must feel pretty pretty bad because it turns out that her mission wasn't even necessary by the end of this.
Like, is there we have Skype now. Is there no Skype in the future? What was so important that she actually had to, like, oh, there's a war going on, but it's really important that you have to go in person to Minbar. So go ahead and go by yourself in a single ship. No escort. Don't
that's
worry
fine.
About it.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Yeah,
like, we have nothing. Right. There's no such thing as secure communications, apparently.
Yeah, that felt totally manufactured.
It is.
And then to the frustrating thing, like you're saying, Alan, is the end for which it is manufactured is like another beat in the linear Love's Delenn plot,
mm-hmm.
which is like, do we want to keep seeing this? I don't really want to.
This must be the end of it, though. This must be. There is no place left.
He hasn't betrayed the Rangers yet.
True. I guess his plotline's not done then.
But will he?
I mean, I feel like we were just saying, it feels like
I have future knowledge and I can just tease you with it.
Yeah, it feels like every prophecy in the show comes true in a little way. Like you don't do a prophecy in a TV show without it somewhat coming true. But they're trapped because the ship that they're on gets blown up. They think they're about to die. They start confessing. And like any good one of these stories, she's like, anything you want to say before we go out? And then he says what we were all expecting him to say. I love you, Delenn. And then she says, she pulls a Han Solo, or she pulls a Han Solo on him and says,
Han Solo, yeah.
I know. And then literally 5 seconds later, they're saved. And he's like, so about.
Well, he doesn't say anything. She's like, oh, hey.
You didn't mean that, right?
So people say things they don't mean sometimes. Oh my gosh, I didn't even hear what you said. It's like all these horrible, totally transparent.
Like, it would have been so much better if she said, like, thank you for saying that. Like, you're always been, like, anything other than let's pretend it didn't happen. Like, I feel like it would have been better just to acknowledge it. And
she was like, I didn't hear what you said. Let's pretend it didn't happen. All I know is that I felt really loved or whatever.
Really and complimented. Like,
oh, yeah. Delenn, come on. That was the worst sequence of responses you could have possibly done.
But this doesn't, I mean, I hope this doesn't mean I can't call on you to do anything I want at any time, right? Like, I hope we can still continue that relationship.
Yucky.
And I'm not usually the type to root for the linear in this type of story, the, like, why wasn't she going to love me? But she's like, awful here. She's awful here.
Yeah.
And the show doesn't really seem to acknowledge it and doesn't seem like they're going to, which is why it's such a bummer. They're like, oh, okay. I guess that's where we're going to leave Delenn and Lanier off. Is she's just going to say, like, that was a really nice thing you said, or did you?
Did you like the third space reference?
I screamed. I, like, howled.
Alan loved the third space reference.
See, I have my theory. There's two different theories. One is either that it establishes, because they didn't know about the third space gate from that conversation. So it either means that that movie is non-canonical, which is very possible.
Yeah.
Or it happened, and Sheridan didn't tell her about it because she wasn't there during the event.
Oh my god, she told me.
And he's such, they're such a horrible couple that he just would not tell her about it, which seems to make more sense.
Oh my god.
That he was just like, do I need to tell her about it? No.
Nope, moving right along.
Not move right along, exactly. Although there is a fan theory that ties the third space stuff to Legend of the Rangers, but I won't go into it further than that.
Okay, well...
We'll see that in a couple of weeks. That'll be very exciting.
In a million years.
All the best stuff happens in a million years. You have to be there for it.
It's true. I think... Wasn't it in this episode when... Yeah, it is. At the very end of this episode when the whole council's talking and they're like, our only bet, like, now if we want to fight the Drak is to go to the Vorlon homeworld. And Leeta's like, nuh-uh, can't do that for a million years.
That was
why last, do I say that? I don't know why I would say that. That's a weird thing to say. I didn't watch the season 4 finale. That's weird.
Yeah, that was the last episode when they were talking about the those little shadow egg things.
Yes.
When they talked about, she's aware of what is that it is shadow technology because something was imprinted. But then the idea of she has other information that's now suddenly plot revealed, unlocked, that... We can go to the Royal and Homeworld in a million years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be sick, and we're going to get their encounter suits, and it's going to like look really cool. Yeah, and then it's not even the final shot. The real final shot is a slow zoom out on Londo Mollari sitting completely alone in his throne room, just kind of tapping his thumbs like, I guess I'm the emperor now. What a fantastic episode, y'all. Like, seriously.
You kind of skipped over also the whole thing of, like, Sheridan showing up, right? Like, as they're already bombarding. And then, like, the Narnge and the Drazi are just like, well, it's too late to stop us. And the other Centauri warships are on their way, and they're going to be pissed. So if you don't join us, I mean, they're not going to care that you didn't shoot. You might as well join up with us.
Yeah, it'll be fun. We're having a great time. Just join in.
Did you guys recognize that general? The Narn general, I should say?
Yes, Magellan did.
His voice sounded familiar.
So I had to look up because I always assumed it was the same character, but he's actually played a different character. If you remember, there's the B5 episode where there's the Narn cruiser wants sanctuary around B5.
Yeah.
So he was that captain, but it's a different character name. It's like, now he's General Natok. Okay. And then he also, that character in that episode was Nakal. And honestly, up until researching this episode, I thought they're the same guy. Like, oh, he made it the general. Good for him. You know,
good,
like,
for him.
What a goal. Why not? Why not make it the same guy?
I know, right? But I think I'm just gonna prefer to just call him General Ethan Rain, because it's again Ethan Rain playing it.
Yeah. Oh, from freaking Buffy. What's it called?
It's Ethan Rain from Buffy.
Again. Oh my gosh!
Wait, is it him? Really?
Yeah, it is him.
What? So he's also one of them in Vari. I love it when the Narn play them in Vari.
Yeah, he was Kaplan, I think it was.
Yep.
Okay, he was. All right.
Oh, my God, right. Ethan Rain. Oh, Buffy the Vampire.
So the other reason for me to choose this episode is because I want to make sure it's an episode where I can pull a Buffy reference.
Thank you. Nice. You're right. There you go. Oh, my God. We talked about Ethan Rain recently because he's like he's Giles's pal. I think someone might have referenced him at some point. That's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he also, I assume you guys have already seen Galaxy Quest because he was awesome in that.
Yes.
Yeah, we've seen Galaxy Quest.
Who is he in Galaxy Quest, though? I forget.
He's the main bad guy.
Oh.
Another alien. He was just like, throw more makeup on me. I've been hitting it out of the park. I'm on five. I was five aliens there, at least three.
Oh.
Go ahead and throw me on Galaxy Quest then. Mm-hmm. No, he'd be great there, too.
Great flick. Yeah, do y'all have any stray notes about the fall of Centauri Prime?
No, I don't think so.
Let me just double check. I think we kind of covered it all. I was just going to say that, like, on last week's episode, you guys were talking about the throwaway line about Garibaldi saying, last time we were in this restaurant, Jeffrey and Sakai, and Sakai, she just disappeared last year. And like, my understanding, I haven't read the book, but there's one of the Babylon 5 books which JMS says is canonical, which is dealing with Sakai and her disappearance. And so there is actually an explanation to that. Again, I haven't read the book. I know what happens, but I don't know if you're going to read it or not, so I won't spoil it. But
To Dream in the City of Sorrows?
It might be that one. I can't remember the
title.
That's
the one that I know is the canon one, so it's probably
not. So it does deal with her disappearance. And
okay. Something. Oh, I see.
And
yeah.
I always assumed that was him specifically, because I think it was like the year before that the book came out. And I think that was him throwing that line in, even more kind of solidifying that, no, I'm treating this book as canonical.
Okay.
Oh, because Catherine Jenner wrote it and she was his wife at the time. Okay.
Yeah. I think he did an AMA on Reddit when he was for his autobiography, and then someone asked him what was his favorite episode of Babylon 5 that he didn't write, and he picked the one that was written by his ex-wife, which was the season one episode where Sinclair is dealing with the workers' strike.
Oh, shit.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Yes, so JMS.
So he said, like, yeah, that was his favorite one that he didn't write.
How many episodes are there that he didn't write? Just two? That one and the Neil Gaiman's episode?
The Day of the Dead, yeah. No, I think if you look back at season one and then a good amount of season two, there's still a lot that he didn't write. And then I know that I was, like, he talked in his biography about John Totillo, being kind of a long friend that they worked with on He-Man, and then they co-created She-Ra and a bunch of other stuff. Like, he did a lot of stuff in the 80s. But what he didn't talk about as much in the biography, but was that John Turturro was, you know, he did the right episodes in seasons 1 and 2, and then they kind of had a falling out of stuff like that, and then they didn't really talk to each other for a while, but he was still, I mean, what he wrote about him was very sweet when John Turturro died a couple of years ago.
Fun stuff. The trivia and how deep it goes always fascinates me, and I also super duper want to read the rest of that JMS autobiography, because it seems really great.
I think the only thing I was going to see in my notes was just about the fact that the Centauri, when they attacked Narn homeworlds, they threw out the mass drivers, and I guess it was just the Narn, the Draw, he didn't have the resources to pull that off, because admittingly, I feel like the lasers that are meant for space battles doesn't necessarily do the most damage to hit the planet surface, but
yeah,
I guess I just went for speed.
Fabulous. Well, if that's it, then we can talk about what we're watching next week on Chatsalon 5. John, do you have that available?
Let me summon that forth.
Thank you.
From the netherworld that has been opened. So next week, based on our viewing order, is the last time that we are watching 2 episodes of Babylon 5 for an episode of Chatsalon 5.
Oh my god! We're at the home stretch, everyone. We're there. We're looking at it. We're smelling it.
Because the last 2 episodes are going to get split up into their own solo episodes. So for next week, we are watching Season 5, Episode 19, The Wheel of Fire. In Season 5, Episode 20, Objects in Motion. The Wheel of Fire, the description is, Leeta is arrested for terrorism while the number of Jakar's worshippers begins to grow.
Yep, right back into the status quo.
Yep,
status quo is now terrorism, apparently.
Yeah.
And then Season 5, Episode 20, Objects in Motion. Lys and Michael learn that they are the targets of an assassin, and Jakar prepares to leave.
Ah!
Dang. All right, bye.
I won't have it. I won't allow it.
We're nearing the end, folks. It's nearly there.
It's very exciting. I was just talking with Nick before we started recording the episode. Like, it's really funny. It's never going to not be funny that we're going to be like wrapping up this beautiful, heartbreaking show, and then right before the actual end, we're going to watch 2 bad movies. Then we're going to get the great end. Then we're going to get more bad movies. Then we're going to get a bad show. Then more bad movies.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love it.
Do you want to reconsider my crazy idea I had before of like, hey, why don't you save Sleeping in Light for the very end?
Like after Crusade? I can't.
After Crusade, after Lost Tales, after Legend of the Rangers, just throw it way at the end, and then you can have that nice dessert at the end.
Well, yeah.
It's looking more and more tempting, I got to be honest with you.
The chat's mantra of eating your, what is it? Eating your vegetables so you can enjoy the meats or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Although, I think the harder decision is like, I made that comment and you read it, but I don't think I heard, no one responded back saying that was a good idea. So I think as far as audience feedback, no one seemed to agree with me.
Does Crusade happen chronologically after Sleeping in Light?
No. Chronologically speaking, Sleeping Light is 20 years in the future.
Oh.
But Crusade is after the show, isn't it?
Crusade is after the show, but it's not 20 years. It's like...
It's after Objects in Rest, but before Sleeping in Light.
Yeah. I want to say like... what's the movie that leads into Crusade?
Call to Arms?
Call to Arms. Call to Arms is like... I don't know, something like 7 years after. It's after the end of B5, other than Sleeping Light, but before the rescue of Centauri Prime, if you want to call it, when we saw that time jump before.
Oh, right.
So it's in the middle there, and I think, I might be remembering it wrong, but it's definitely like, Sheridan is in that movie, and that directly leads into Crusade. Well, so it's not 20 years.
I'm willing to consider your proposition. I think people should vote. I want to hear what people have to say.
Yeah. Do you want us to go out beautifully and end on Sleeping in Light and like weep and be like, we just watched every Babylon 5 thing there is to watch, and now we're ending on the show's Season 5 finale? Or do you care about the order that we're going on right now? And do you want us to end on something dumb, like on a fun epilogue? What do you prefer? Email us, chatspot@gmail.com, at chatspot on Twitter.
And keep in mind, chronologically, it's like all of Crusade and the movies is going to take us probably like 2.5 months worth of show time.
Yeah.
So it's either, yeah, you get that at the end, or we delay watching Sleeping in Light for that long.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of not having to end on like the Lost Tales sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I like the Lost Tales, but I'm not gonna claim it was the highlight to end on.
No, I think Sleeping in Light exists for that reason. But yeah, we will consider that as we consider continue bearing along, but that shouldn't affect next week. So that's what we're watching next week.
Groovy.
To take it to the plug zone, here we go, folks. As I mentioned a minute ago, if you'd like to email us, please do so, chatspod@gmail.com. Also, Chatspot on Twitter is the number one source for Babylon 5 memes in 2019.
The Centauri.
He really does say it like that. Vrini totally says like he says it weird.
That reminds me that there's a outtake, and we're having an MP3 of it back in the day, where it was like between Garibaldi and Lando, and then one just goes Centauri, and then it goes Centauri, tomato, tomato, potato, potato. Let's call the whole thing off.
That's adorable.
It's probably somewhere on YouTube, I imagine.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you can contact us there. If you'd like to send us comments via your voice, send those as well. We love getting voicemail comments. Rate us on iTunes or your podcast platform of choice, because we really want people to know about Chats and the hard work we're doing here at the Chats Salon 5 Studios in sunny I can never think Calgary, of a new city. Alberta. There you go.
Yeah, Calgary.
Shout out to the Cowboys of Calgary.
Alberta.
Also, if you are able to, please consider checking out patreon.com/chatspod. Nick and his brother Pat are both patrons over there. You can back us at up to $5 a month. You'll get all of our content. You know, I guess I'm more than that, but our content goes up to $5 a month. Every month you'll get a movie commentary. Every other week you'll get a Chats Nights. That's the show where Magellan and I just kind of talk. We're going to be playing the Babylon 5 card game on there soon, which is super exciting. Thanks to the donations of Pat and Nick, actually. We were able to procure a copy of the Babylon 5 card game. So we'll be playing that on there, and you'll get to hear us discuss that. And then also on the off weeks, you get to hear pilot chats, where Magellan and I watch pilots of TV shows and try to determine if they are going to be good for Chats. For the show that we do. Yeah, and also, if you are looking at our Patreon numbers right now, we're trying to, our goal for, what is it, by Christmas, Magellan?
By Christmas, yeah.
We're looking to hit at least $75 a month consistently by Christmas, because if we do that, that's our sort of like minor stretch goal. We're going to unlock the Disney vault, the Chats vault. It's the 12 days of Chatsmas, everyone. Chat snacks is a new thing we're gonna be doing just for the 12 days of Christmas, where we put
like random audio files of like previous projects, defunct projects, or like things we've written, or you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like little things that we've maybe referenced before, like my short story, which I just recorded myself reading today, old podcasts that haven't even like come out yet that we might do and then end up making in the future or not. Like little pilot things. So it's sort of like a fun little behind the scenes treat for people who are patrons. We're aiming to get to $75 a month by Christmas. We believe in you, folks. Yeah. Nick, do you want to give us your chatsums for this week, please?
I have 2.5, if that's
great.
Allowed.
Lovely.
Charlie Sheen, the other guy, and the third guy.
So my first one, it's not even like, I don't think it's that unheard of, was I was just going to mention the Captain Disillusion, if you guys ever watched his YouTube channel. It's really great production value, and he dives into like debunking viral videos that are fake and stuff like that. But he does a lot about production and stuff. But the reason I mentioned him is two things. One is that he is a big B5 fan. He did a quick kind of homage to it. And then if you go back to his earlier stuff, because he used to go to the Skeptics Con or whatever it's called there. So there is a brief cameo by Penn and Teller on it, just to tease Magellan.
Hey, oh, shit. I'm listening.
It's a YouTube channel getting a Penn and Teller cameo.
That's incredible. That's,
wow.
My other one was, and this is because you guys are now getting to the end of B5. There's a Finnish, if you like independent foreign films, foreign language films, there's a Finnish film called Star Wreck in the Perkining. And it's a weird one because it's the guys that did like kind of smaller, shorter length, like parody Star Trek movies. But this is their first full length one that they did. And I think at the time it was like the record for the most downloads of an independent movie on BitTorrent or something like that. But I'll send you the YouTube link because they did make it available on YouTube. But it's a full on Star Trek / Babylon 5 parody feature length film.
Cool.
It's a weird one. Like I said, there's subtitles and everything like that, but it is in Finnish with an otherwise broken Russian. But it's a weird but fun kind of movie. If you're a fan of Star Trek and Babylon 5, there's a lot of good jokes about the characters and stuff. And I don't know, there's a Kosh thing, but I don't know what it goes. You already said Kosh and then Josh, and I'm not sure what you would call this one. But and then my half a chatsum is if you guys go over to reddit.com/chatspod, you'll see that I created a subreddit for you guys.
Whoa!
which is for the most part just places where I post the episodes cause for the one day that it you know takes off and people start showing up. But Pat almost mentioned it, but you guys make reference to, oh, if we could have alternate title names for episodes, that I've been just doing that for fun.
Oh,
oh my god, there's gags on you. What? What? This is a whole thing? There's comments? Hello?
Oh, this is amazing.
Reddit.com/r/chatspod. They made us a subreddit. Oh my god. Thank
Has this
you.
Been secretly existing for months?
It's been around for a bit, yeah. Like, I don't, like, because I'm going, do I just, like, flat out, like, push it? Like, do I go to Babylon 5 and, like, push it there? And I was like, you know, if someone ever happens to Google it, maybe it'll show up on an index. But for now, I'm just going to enjoy. At first, I was just posting links in general, but then I was like, I started thinking of alternate title names for your episode.
I could
so, like,
cry.
You guys made the. I stole your joke from the last one, whereas. Renamed it as the Core's Mothership, the Core's Fathership.
Fathership.
Things like that. So. Oh,
wow,
this is fantastic.
Thank you,
Nick.
Wow. Oh my god, there's funny episode titles. I'm dead. I'm dead, fam. This is awesome. Everybody go subscribe to r/chatspod. Holy shit. That's amazing. We're always like, how are we going to get back on Reddit if we can't go on subreddits for shows we're not done with yet? And now we have a place to talk about the show with people. Aww. Well, thank you very much, Nick. We really appreciate that. And I want to say I appreciate just having you and your brother on our podcast. It's been a wonderful time with both of you.
Yeah, well, I already booked our episode for Crusade, which unintentionally was the one that Pat wanted to do. So I guess that's my revenge for him scooping me on this one.
I will say Pat messaged me because I accidentally called him earlier. And he said, are you talking to my brother? And then he said, don't believe his lies. So Pat is not only a fan of the film Memento, but also a fan of roasting his brother. wonderful, wonderful. Oh, my God. Sorry, I'm like emotionally choked up right now. I need to process a lot of things. But again, thank you very much, Nick, for joining us for this discussion. We'll definitely be hearing from you again when we get to Crusade. And Magellan, what is your chat number this week? I almost forgot to do our chatsums.
I know. Shoot, man. I don't know. My chatsums just go. Have we done go for a walk? Because it's
like
fall.
Time.
But it's the fall, though. Have we done the
go for
autumn?
A fall walk?
I think autumn is my chatsum.
The month of autumn.
Yeah, it's just it's nice.
It is
it's
the best month.
Nice, it's a nice time to go for a walk.
Nick, what's your favorite season?
I always liked spring because it was like warm but not too warm.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna say that sadly, like I originally, you know, like I moved to Vancouver over a decade ago, and then I kind of joked like, oh, I miss winter because it's so much rainy here. Like it was, if you like fall, then you should be in like Seattle or Vancouver because it's like 6 months of fall, right? Wow. With the weather. So if you ever get the compulsion to go into the West Coast, just try that out, I guess.
Excellent. That's fair. Autumn is a good chatsum. And to wrap it up, my chatsum for this week is just the concept of a shoujo autumn. So tying into Magellan's, if you're going to enjoy the weather, and you might as well enjoy some anime while you're at it. I don't care how you identify. I want you to go and look up the best shoujo of all time. Just look up if you haven't seen Sailor Moon, go fucking watch Sailor Moon right now. If you haven't seen The Vision of Escalfone, go watch this instant. If you haven't seen Revolutionary Girl Utena, you have to. These are all legal mandates. If you want to be friends with Alan, you have to watch these shows at least at some point. Give them a shot. I was raised to think that shows are for girls. Those are not for you. Don't watch that. I think that's a bunch of bull hockey. Right now, every night before bed, I watch a single episode of Sailor Moon and a single episode of Utena, and it's just so much better than endless. I'm also reading Naruto, so like I'm a complete hypocrite. It's like, on this corner, this ninja boy is perfect, and he gets better all the time. He always beats everyone. And then in this corner, everyone's gay. Like all the way, and they're all sad, but they're figuring things out, and they're disasters in their own special ways, and I just love it. And if I can somehow convince somebody to give some shoujo anime a shot, those are my recommendations. Just try it. Try something new. Get out of that comfort zone. Yeah.
Wonderful stuff.
Indeed. Thanks, Magellan, as always, for being the rock to my hard place. And you like that? And thank you, listener, for being in between the two of us. And thank you for listening to this episode of Chat Salon 5. Peace.